This week on Potlatch, Matthew Nicolai tells of Chulista investments and of college outside. Now, a report from Dave Johnson of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
This is game biologist Dave Johnson with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Fairbanks with a special report for Potlatch. Most Alaskans are by now familiar with the story of the decline of the western Arctic caribou. The reasons for the precipitous decline from 242,000 animals in 1970 to less than one quarter of that this summer are equally well known, so I won't dwell on them here. The important question many Alaskans are now asking is, what's going to be done about the situation? The first steps were taken late last week. At that time, the Department of Fish and Game issued an emergency order closing the range of the western Arctic caribou to all caribou hunting. Since an emergency order can remain in force for a limited time only, the next logical question is, where do we go from here? Game Division Director Bob Rausch explains.
The emergency order, which was promulgated on August 14th, was for the purpose of allowing the board an opportunity to receive maximum input from the public and from the department during a approximately a five-week period, at which time, on September 20th, the board will consider new regulations for the entire western Arctic herd and for the porcupine herd.
The game board will meet on September 20 in Fairbanks to consider a set of regulation proposals which could substantially change the character of caribou hunting in the Arctic.
It is our intent to carry to the board a number of options. We have put one of the options in regulation proposal form, which would be to allocate the those animals that may be taken on a subunit basis, creating a number of subunits throughout the Arctic and issuing permits for each subunit within the appropriate villages, which would tend to give the local residents an edge in obtaining access to the harvestable numbers of caribou.
While the proposals have already been made, the board does not necessarily have to accept them, and this is where input from Alaskans comes in. Rausch said that anyone concerned about the western Arctic caribou situation should pick up a copy of the regulation proposals from the Fish and Game offices in either Juneau, Anchorage, or Fairbanks, or request a copy by mail. With these proposals in mind, comments should then be sent to the board. He said written comments should be sent not later than September 14th, so board members will have time to study them before the meeting. Comments should be sent to the Board of Game, Subport Building, Juneau, Alaska. Man the Hunter isn't the only cause of problems in the western Arctic herd. Department biologists estimate wolves may be taking some 15,000 caribou annually, which is now much more than the herd can support without a further decline, even if hunting were stopped altogether. Last spring, the game board directed the department to control wolves in the western Arctic if the caribou herd was below a certain size. This summer, it became obvious that the herd was indeed below that size, and that relief from both hunters and wolves will be needed to cause an increase in the herd. Again, Bob Rausch.
To generalize, the herd appears to be in good condition. That is, there's high production of calves, reasonably good survival of yearlings. There are fat, and as near as we can tell now, the range itself is in relatively good condition. The herd then appears to be capable of increasing rather rapidly, given relief from human use and from wolf predation. Now, what would happen if we don't take any wolves? If there are, as I believe, some 1,000 to 1,500 wolves in the area, in all probability, the caribou population would continue to decrease.
Although it's too early now to say what exact method of wolf control will be used, Rausch said that given the size of the area and the difficulties of transportation, it would undoubtedly involve fixed-wing aircraft. Some of the obvious options include contracting with individuals or perhaps issuing permits for the aerial shooting of wolves. He said the operation could also be conceivably assisted by department personnel. The solutions that have been proposed are a result of compromise, and for that reason will probably satisfy no one totally. However, the final decisions on the matter have not yet all been made, so I would urge you to make your thoughts known on the situation to the Board of Game before their September 20 meeting. Again, their address is Board of Game, Subport Building, Juneau, Alaska. For Potlatch, this has been Dave Johnson with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game reporting.
Music from Janch and Renborn. Next, we hear from the communications supervisor for Chilista Corporation. Matthew Nicolai lists some of the investments of Chilista in Anchorage.
Right now, the major investment area we're getting into is the hotel, which is on Block 19 between 5th and 6th in Eagle. And it's a large complex hotel, which are certain will be operating the hotel for a long period of time, and we plan to start building it in April, and all the plans are all set to go, and this is the only big major investment area where we're really interested in.
In Anchorage.
In Anchorage, and we're into a lot of investments in that area, like the Settlers Bay properties, which we own 60%. Of the properties where we're developing the 1,566 acres into we have a golf course, a ski resort, and a lodge, a shopping center, and it's been going for since the time from this summer on, and they've been building a lodge. They plan to get the 9 holes of the golf course done by end of the summer. I've talked to a whole lot of shareholders from our region, and many of them feel that it's a real good investment area where they feel that we'll do good over there. And also a lot of the village corporations are into this, are getting into the hotel project and investing their money in there. Plus they have an investment pool in which a whole lot of villages invest into certain stocks and bonds in the lower states. And another area is what we call the Valdez homes, and we're going 50-50 with Penny Mobile Homes, and we have 211 spaces where we're building the mobile homes down there in Valdez. And past few months, Chilista has been negotiating with the Seattle Port Authority regarding Pier 48. It's a $1.2 million project in which we were supposed to develop Pier 48 into a restaurant and all Alaskan artistry center, instead of being it as a have arts and crafts from Japan or Taiwan. It'll be all Alaska instead of, as like in Anchorage, if you go to the airport, all the dolls and all the art things there are made of, they're made in these, like in Japanese and Taiwan.
So, and Pier 48 in Anchorage?
No, there's Pier 48 in Seattle.
Seattle. Oh,
right,
okay.
And that's another big project we have. And we have a couple of subsidiaries that, like the R&R Travel Agency, which we have two offices, the one in Anchorage and the one in Bethel. And we're doing really good on that side. And we just start the travel agency in Bethel in, I think it was in September. And it's really doing good over there. And another one is the Our Earth Science Consulting Firm, which our main offices are in Anchorage, and we have offices in Long Beach, and they have contracts with the villages in Alaska, plus with other people in the lower states or in other countries, which I do not want to mention at this time.
It's a good land, so they say. It's a good land, so they say. My land is a rich land. Its hills and its valleys abound. Its highways go to many good places, where many good people are found. Where many good
Anderson. Once again, Matthew Nicolai, who has varied his college career quite a bit. He has studied at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks and in an exchange program at the Westfield State University in Massachusetts. He recalls his first experiences in college outside.
The first day I arrived, there were a whole bunch of students there. They thought I'd be wearing all this muckluck business and parka business when I walked out of the airplane. And I really surprised them when I walked out. They didn't know who I was. They didn't know how I looked and all that. And as soon as I got out, they, I mean, I really surprised those people. They didn't know who to meet. And I didn't know who I was supposed to meet. And next thing, these whole bunch of people came up to me and they start to, and they asked me who I was, and my to-be roommate was there. And as soon as he got up to me, "Where's your parka? Where's your mucklucks?" And that's what he asked me. I told him, no, I'm not that kind of an Eskimo. And another thing that I found out over there was, you know, it's, well, I've traveled in a lot of states before. And one thing I found over there was, you know, it's real easy to get out of the school, and there's a whole lot of opportunities over there to get into instead of like a isolated place in Alaska where, you know, you have to practically fly around most of the time. And as for down there, you're open, and there's a lot of opportunities open as far as your education goes. And as for, like, any Alaskan that applies to a school down there, they'd have a chance to enter any school they want to.
Matt Nikolai told me it's easier for Alaskans to go to college of their own choice than for people in other states because there are fewer Alaskans to compete with.
Especially for the Alaskan natives, I think it's something for some schools in the lower states to accept them to those schools because of the, you know, what has been happening with Alaska, with the Alaska Native claims, and with a lot of things going on with Alaska that, you know, they're accepting a lot of Alaskans in the lower states, which I was really surprised at. Like, from our region, we have a whole lot of students down there in the lower states. And, you know, as I was really surprised when I found the statistics on, you know, how many students we have outside in the states.
I asked if the University of Alaska serves Alaskan natives better because of special programs like student orientation services, which are especially designed for Alaska natives. But Matt told me outside universities, too, have a lot to offer Alaska natives.
In Albuquerque, they have a good system for natives. And also in Harvard, I found that out, and they have like the SOS system, except it operates in a different way. And they have a lot of good programs to natives in Harvard, and same with the school I really plan, I want to attend is George Washington University. And they have really good programs with, you know, Indians and natives of U.S.
And it's, but it's not specifically, it's designed for natives of the United States,
yes.
Not specifically for Alaska natives.
Well, if you go to Stanford, there's a whole bunch of Alaska natives down there that, which you could, you know, they have a program down there because they have a whole bunch of students down there for Alaska natives, which, you know, their whole system is operated like SOS, and they have really good programs down there for Alaska natives of, you know, to cope with the their changes from real small towns or small village to a large place like Stanford. I was the first Eskimo to go to that school, and I think I set an example to those students and to those people down there that, you know, an Eskimo is a person that lives in igloo, which, you know, I changed the concept of that. And plus, to the places I've traveled, I've changed a lot of views of Alaska. And I've had, this summer, I've had a lot of friends come up to Alaska, which I convinced to come up here to see it. And including the three exchange students I've known really good, and I've, you know, asked to apply to this program, and they did, and they got accepted. And, you know, they found out that, you know, Alaska isn't the way they thought it was, really. It's one of those things that, as for the people down there, they thought, as, you know, when I was going to be at that school, it was going to be one of those types of students that sit around. But I got around down there. Plus, I was busy most of the time. I was working with state legislature down there as in a student internship program, which, you know, I was really surprised to be selected. And there were, I think there were 14, 15 applicants, and they only selected four out of those, that many applicants. And I was really surprised. And the person that is in charge of that program, who is state representative, Peter Villas, is, you know, the one reason why he selected me was he wanted to find out more about Alaska. And plus, you know, I really surprised him when I worked with him that I could do a lot what I wanted to get into.
I asked if Native students should go to college in Alaska or in an outside university.
It depends on the person. For me, my two of my brothers and my sister have been trying for a long time. As soon as I was in my junior year in high school, they tried to convince me to go to a lower state high school, but I told them I want to come up here to University of Alaska for one reason, so I'd be closer to home, because I've been spending all my 4 years down in the lower states. And one thing I'm trying to convince my younger brother right now is that he should go to a lower state school. And I'm really trying hard right now. For one reason is the field he wants to get into is I've asked him to apply to that certain school, and he applied to it, and he got accepted. I'm trying to convince him right now to that school. As far as the other natives are concerned, I think it's one of those things that, you know, I can point out that native could go to that school, or you know, I think it'd be better for like a person from a larger town, like from Bethel or from Nome or from Barrow, or you know, those people are there closer to the what is going on in a larger village. Plus there are a lot of Alaska Native students down Anchorage or either in Fairbanks, which they are, you know, they're used to a city life already, and I highly recommend that they go to an outside school for, you know, for their own experience. And it's really something to get down there and go to a school down there. I mean, I think it's better to go to a small university or college first before entering a large school. If you plan to head down to a large school in the lower states, like Stanford or Harvard, and which, you know, I have a big dream for, but it's one of those things that I wish I would have done as soon as I graduated from high school. Now I regret it that I didn't follow my older brothers and one sister I have at the present moment. A lot of students I've talked to in Anchorage, a lot of my friends, I've asked that they go to an outside school for, you know, as in the fields they want to get into, like, you know, I have a real close friend on there that, you know, I'm trying to convince right now to go to Harvard. And I've written to those people, written some recommendations to them, because I think I know about 6-7 professors down there at the present time, which are really good friends of mine. They were up here this summer, and I've convinced those people to come up here, and they came up here. And right now, this real close friend of mine is, for sure, is heading down to Harvard this coming fall, which I was really surprised, you know, at. And she used to be a University of Alaska student.
All right, now this is a song about phonograph records. This is a song about phonograph records. Don't leave your records in the sun. They'll warp and they won't be good for anyone. Don't leave your records in the sun. They get all wavy and they just won't run. They just won't play, 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 just won't play no more. Well, I had this record that I really didn't like. It was the last one they had in the store. I left it laying on the car back seat, and now it just won't play no more. Don't leave your records in the sun. They'll warp and they won't be good for anyone. Don't leave your records in the sun. They get all wavy and they just won't run. They just won't play, just won't play, just won't play, just won't play, just won't play. No.
John Hartford. Now this report from the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs is responsible for the overall management and protection of 13 million acres of forest lands on Indian reservations. It's also responsible for the supervision of nearly a billion board feet of timber per year. Forestry is big business then for a number of reservations, but it is also a big problem. One tribe along the Pacific Ocean in the Northwest is the Quinault Indian Nation. This tribe is battling to save its forest land from bad logging practices and liquidation. Tribal economy is dependent on forestry economy, and reforestation is a major priority. Guy McMines, a resource development specialist, says there is a great need for a long-range management plan.
The forests in Indian country were managed on a liquidation basis, and the major part of the proceeds have gone to interests outside of the reservation. We certainly don't mind other people benefiting from our resource, but the problem has been there's been no reinvestment in the natural resources. This is a national problem in Indian country, and I think it's even a problem in national forests and BLM land. But on the reservations, it's severe because there has been very little attention to the reforestation of our property. And all the things that go along with reforestation programs, for example, on the Quinault, the money was just made available for a comprehensive soil survey. This soil survey will be used to determine which kinds of trees grow best on the reservation.
Guy McMine says tribes also have trouble obtaining a proper inventory. In other words, they're too poor to get an accounting system to keep track of the growth of their trees. It's important, McMine says, to be able to project for the future. The search is still on for Alaska Natives who may be eligible to participate in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Congress opened the door for additional enrollment when it was discovered there was a substantial number of people who missed the 1973 enrollment deadline. Commissioner of Indian Affairs Morris Thompson says it was out of compassion that Congress opened the rolls for those who were left out of the settlement.
In any human public program, anytime someone gets left out, it's a saddening event. We'd like to see 100%, but I don't know that that will ever be attainable, but we do want everyone that thinks they're eligible to apply. We enrolled approximately 70,000 Alaska Natives. Probably in every country in the free world and every state in the Union. The enrollment program ends in December, but the benefits that will accrue to the regional corporations and to stockholders, we hope will go on in perpetuity, because the benefits, they will be landowners and as individual stockholders in the various corporations, and we hope they'll all be successful and continue to pay dividends to their members.
That was Morris Thompson, Commissioner of Indian Affairs.
And this is Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening. Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.